Welcome back, everyone, to 1001 Ghost Stories and Tales of the Macabre. Our story today, The Doom That Came to Sarnoth, by H.P. Lovecraft. There is in the land of Minar a vast still lake that is fed by no stream, and out of which no stream flows. 10,000 years ago there stood by its shore the mighty city of Sarnoth, but Sarnoth stands there no more. It is told that in the immemorial years when the world was young, before ever the men of Sarnoth came to the land of Minar, another city stood beside the lake, the gray stone city of Ib, which was old as the lake itself, and peopled with beings not pleasing to behold. Very odd and ugly were these beings, as indeed are most beings of a world yet Inchuit and rudely fashioned. It is written on the brick cylinders of Kadatharon that the beings of Ib were in hue as green as the lake and the mists that rise above it, that they had bulging eyes, pouting flabby lips, and curious ears, and were without voice. It is also written that they descended one night from the moon in a mist, they and the vast still lake and gray stone city Ib. However this may be, it is certain that they worshipped a sea-green stone idol chiseled in the likeness of Bokrug, the great water lizard, before which they danced horribly when the moon was gibbous. And it is written in the papyrus of Ilarnik that they one day discovered fire, and thereafter kindled flames on many ceremonial occasions. But not much is written of these beings, because they lived in a very ancient time, and man is young, and knows but little of very ancient living things. After many eons, men came to the land of Minar, dark shepherd folk with their fleecy flocks, who built Thra, Ilarnik, and Kadatharon, and the winding river A. And certain tribes, more hardy than the rest, pushed on to the border of the lake, and built Sarnoth at a spot where precious metals were found in the earth. Not far from the gray city of Ib did the wandering tribes lay the first stones of Sarnoth, and at the beings of Ib they marveled greatly. But with their marveling was mixed hate, for they thought it not right that beings of such aspect should walk about the world of men at dusk, nor did they like the strange sculptures upon the gray monoliths of Ib, for why those sculptures lingered so late in the world, even until the coming men, none can tell. Unless it was because the land of Minar is very still and remote from most other lands, both of waking and of dream. As the men of Sarnoth beheld more of the beings of Ib, their hate grew, and it was not less because they found the beings weak and soft as jelly to the touch of stones and arrows. So one day the young warriors, the slingers and the spearmen and the bowmen, marched against Ib and slew all the inhabitants thereof, pushing the queer bodies into the lake with long spears, because they did not wish to touch them. And because they did not like the gray sculptured monoliths of Ib, they cast these also into the lake, wondering from the greatness of the labor, however the stones were brought from afar, as they must have been, since there is naught like them in the land of Minar or in the lands adjacent. Thus of the very ancient city of Ib was nothing spared, save the sea-green stone idol chiseled in the likeness of Bokrug, the water lizard. This the young warriors took back with them as a symbol of conquest over the old gods and beings, and as a sign of leadership in Minar. But on the night after it was set up in the temple, a terrible thing must have happened, for weird lights were seen over the lake, and in the morning the people found the idol gone and the high priest Taranish lying dead, as from some fear unspeakable. And before he died, Taranish had scrawled upon the altar of chrysolite with coarse, shaky strokes, the sign of doom. After Taranish, there were many high priests in Sarnoth, but never was the sea-green stone idol found. And many centuries came and went, wherein Sarnoth prospered exceedingly, so that only priests and old women remembered what Taranish had scrawled upon the altar of chrysolite. Betwixt Sarnoth and the city of Flarmek arose a caravan route, and the precious metals from the earth were exchanged for other metals and rare cloths and jewels and books and tools for artificers and all things of luxury that are known to the people who dwell along the winding river A and beyond. So Sarnath waxed mighty and learned and beautiful, and sent forth conquering armies to subdue the neighboring cities. And in time there sate upon a throne in Sarnath the kings of all the land of Minar, and of many of the lands adjacent. The wonder of the world and the pride of all mankind was Sarnath the Magnificent. Of polished desert-quarried marble were its walls, in height 300 cubits and in breadth 75, so that chariots might pass each other as men drove them along the top. For full 500 stadia did they run, being open only on the side toward the lake where a green stone seawall kept back the waves that rose oddly once a year at the festival of the destroying of Ib. In Sarnath were 50 streets from the lake to the gates of the caravans, and 50 more intersecting them. With onyx they were paved, save those whereon the horses and camels and elephants trod, which were paved with granite. And the gates of Sarnath were as many as the landward ends of the streets, each of bronze, and flanked by the figures of lions and elephants carven from some stone no longer known among men. The houses of Sarnath were of glazed brick and chalcedony, each having its walled garden and crystal lakelet. With strange art were they builded, for no other city had houses like them, and travelers from Thra and Alarnic and Cathedron marveled at the shining domes wherewith they were surmounted. But more marvelous still were the palaces and the temples, and the gardens made by Zokar the olden king. There were many palaces, the last of which were mightier than any in Thra or in Alarnic or Cathedron. So high were they that one within might sometimes fancy himself beneath only the sky. Yet when lighted with torches dipped in the oil of Dothar, their walls showed vast paintings of kings and armies, of a splendor at once inspiring and stupefying to the beholder. Many were the pillars of the palaces, all of tinted marble, and carven into designs of surpassing beauty. And in most of the palaces the floors were mosaics of beryl and lapis lazuli, and sardonyx and carbuncle, and other choice materials, so disposed that the beholder might fancy himself walking over beds of the rarest flowers. And there were likewise fountains which cast scented waters about in pleasing jets arranged with cunning art. Outshining all others was the palace of the kings of Minar and of the lands adjacent. On a pair of golden crouching lions rested the throne, many steps above the gleaming floor. And it was wrought of one piece of ivory, though no man lives who knows whence so vast a piece could have come. In that palace there were also many galleries, and many amphitheaters where lions and men and elephants battled at the pleasure of the kings. Sometimes the amphitheaters were flooded with water conveyed from the lake in mighty aqueducts, and there were enacted stirring sea fights, or combats betwixt swimmers and deadly marine things. Lofty and amazing were the 17 tower-like temples of Sarnath, fashioned of a bright, multicolored stone not known elsewhere. A full 1,000 cubits high stood the greatest among them, wherein the high priest dwelt with a magnificence scarce less than that of the kings. On the ground were halls as vast and splendid as those of the palaces, where gathered throngs in worship of Zokalar and Tamash and Loban, the chief gods of Sarnath, whose incense-enveloped shrines were as the thrones of monarchs. Not like the elkans of other gods were those of Zokalar and Tamash and Loban, for so close to life were they that one might swear the graceful bearded gods themselves sate on the ivory thrones. And up unending steps of Zircon was the tower chamber, wherefrom the high priest looked out over the city and the plains and the lake by day, and at the cryptic moon and significant stars and planets, and their reflections in the lake at night. Here was done the very secret and ancient rite in detestation of Bokrug, the water lizard, and here rested the altar of chrysolite, which bore the doom scrawl of Taranish. We'll return to our show right after this message from our sponsors.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
And now, back to our show. Wonderful likewise were the gardens made by Zokar the Olden King. In the center of Sarnath they lay, covering a great space and encircled by a high wall. And they were surmounted by a mighty dome of glass, through which shone the sun and moon and planets when it was clear, and from which were hung fulgent images of the sun and moon and stars and planets when it was not clear. In summer, the gardens were cooled with fresh, odorous breezes skillfully wafted by fans, and in winter they were heated with concealed fires, so that in those gardens it was always spring. There ran little streams over bright pebbles, dividing meads of green and gardens of many hues, and spanned by a multitude of bridges. Many were the waterfalls in their courses, and many were the hued lakelets into which they expanded. Over the streams and lakelets rode white swans, whilst the music of rare birds chimed in with the melody of the waters. In ordered terraces rose the green banks, adorned here and there with bowers of vines and sweet blossoms, and seats and benches of marble and porphyry. And there were many small shrines and temples where one might rest or pray to small gods. Each year there was celebrated in Sarnath the Feast of the Destroying of Ib, at which time wine, song, dancing, and merriment of every kind abounded. Great honors were then paid to the shades of those who had annihilated the odd ancient beings, and the memory of those beings and of their elder gods was derided by dancers and lutenists crowned with roses from the gardens of Zokar, and the kings would look out over the lake and curse the bones of the dead that lay beneath it. At first the high priests liked not these festivals, for there had descended amongst them queer tales of how the sea-green Elkon had vanished, and how Taranish had died from fear, and left a warning. And they said that from their high tower they sometimes saw lights beneath the waters of the lake. But as many years passed without calamity, even the priests laughed and cursed and joined in the orgies of the feasters. Indeed, had they not themselves, in their high tower, often performed the very ancient and secret rite in detestation of Bokrug, the water lizard? And 1,000 years of riches and delight passed over Sarnath, wonder of the world. Gorgeous beyond thought was the feast of the 1,000th year of the destroying of Ib. For a decade it had been talked of in the land of Minar, and as it drew nigh there came to Sarnath on horses and camels and elephants men from Thra, Ilarnik, and Kadetharon, and all the cities of Minar and the lands beyond. Before the marble walls on the appointed night were pitched the pavilions of princes and the tents of travelers. Within his banquet hall reclined Narghizhe, the king, drunken with ancient wine from the vaults of conquered Bnath, and surrounded by feasting nobles and hurrying slaves. There were eaten many strange delicacies at that feast. Peacocks from the distant hills of Limpian, heels of camels from the Benazic desert, nuts and spices from Sidathrian groves, and pearls from wave-washed Matai dissolved in the vinegar of Thra. Of sauces, there were an untold number, prepared by the subtlest cooks in all of Minar, and suited to the palate of every feaster. But most prized of all the viands were the great fishes from the lake, each of vast size, and served upon golden platters set with rubies and diamonds. Whilst the king and his nobles feasted within the palace and viewed the crowning dish as it awaited them on golden platters, others feasted elsewhere. In the tower of the great temple the priests held revels, and in pavilions without the walls the princes of neighboring lands made merry. And it was the high priest Gnai Ka, who first saw the shadows that descended from the gibbous moon into the lake, and the damnable green mists that arose from the lake to meet the moon, and to shroud in a sinister haze the towers and the domes of fated Sarnoth. Thereafter those in the towers and without the walls beheld strange lights on the water, and saw that the gray rock, Acheron, which was wont to rear high above it near the shore, was almost submerged. And fear grew vaguely, yet swiftly, so that the princes of Ilarnik and of far Rokal took down and folded their tents and pavilions and departed, though they scarce knew the reason for their departing. Then, close to the hour of midnight, all the bronze gates of Sarnoth burst open and emptied forth a frenzied throng that blackened the plain, so that all the visiting princes and travelers fled away in fright. For on the faces of this throng was writ a madness born of horror unendurable, and on their tongues were words so terrible that no hearer paused for proof. Men whose eyes were wild with fear shrieked aloud of the sight within the king's banquet hall, where through the windows were seen no longer the forms of Narghazay and his nobles and slaves, but a horde of indescribable green voiceless things with bulging eyes, pouting flabby lips, and curious ears, things which danced horribly, bearing in their paws golden platters set with rubies and diamonds and containing uncouth flames. And the princes and travelers, as they fled from the doomed city of Sarnoth on horses and camels and elephants, looked again upon the mist-begetting lake and saw the gray rock Acheron was quite submerged. Through all the land of Minar and the land adjacent spread the tales of those who had fled from Sarnoth, and caravans sought that accursed city and its precious metals no more. It was long ere any travelers went thither, and even then only the brave and adventurous young men of yellow hair and blue eyes, who are no kin to the men of Minar. These men indeed went to the lake to view Sarnoth, but though they found the vast still lake itself, and the gray rock Acheron which rears high above it near the shore, they beheld not the wonder of the world and the pride of all mankind. Where once had risen walls of 300 cubits and towers yet higher, now stretched only the marshy shore, and where once had dwelt 50 million of men, now crawled the detestable water lizard. Not even the mines of precious metal remained. Doom had come to Sarnoth. But half buried in the rushes was spied a curious green idol, an exceedingly ancient idol, chiseled in the likeness of Bokrug, the great water lizard. That idol, enshrined in the high temple at Ilarnik, was subsequently worshipped beneath the gibbous moon throughout the land of Minar. Thanks for joining us for 1001 Ghost Stories and Tales of the Macabre. We hope you enjoyed this story by H.P. Lovecraft. There'll be many more to follow. Lovecraft died unknown and in poverty, but achieved great acclaim after his death. He published under multiple pen names: Lewis Theobald, Humphrey Littlewit, Ward Phillips, and Edward Softley. You may not know that Lovecraft also wrote poetry, such as a cycle of verse, featuring verses with his characteristic flair for the dark side of nature. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next Sunday night at 8 p.m. Eastern with a brand new story for 1001 Ghost Stories and Tales of the Macabre. Between now and then, please do take a few moments and send us a review. We would enjoy one very much. Thank you, and we'll be back soon.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.